We've got a pretty good idea of where they're not.
The others followed suit, aiming into the gloom at different angles. Doc's Lama was fairly useless as a long-range weapon, but its blasts provided them with a psychological edge. Suddenly, the campsite was filled with running, shooting, half-naked men. Not only did they carry automatic rifles, they carried tomahawks, knives, and even a few feathered lances. Their faces were painted with ferocious designs. They bounded and leapt too quickly for Ryan to get an accurate count of their number. The defense put up by Hellscale's Sekhmen was disorganized and sporadic. They retreated toward the WAG, half-heartedly fighting a rearguard action without watching one another's backs or even taking the time to aim their weapons properly. They were in great danger of catching each other in a crossfire. Ryan and his friends were veterans of dozens of battles, and they rushed out into the campsite in a wedge formation. JB took the point of the V. Mildred, Christy, and Jack waited until their targets were clearly framed in their weapon sights. Ryan hung back to cover Doc while he adjusted the position of the Lama's firing hammer. The double-barreled weapon could be fired like a shotgun, or once the hammer was repositioned to fall on the revolver chamber, to fire 9.44 caliber rounds. Fleur drilled one of the Sioux through the back of the head with her Beretta. She whirled on Christy as the Titian-haired woman put a 38 caliber slug in the center of a warrior's chest.
God damn it, I said headshots!
You don't tell me to do anything.
Ready and able, though not particularly willing.
Doc followed Ryan out into the battlefield. Ryan saw one of the warriors rush toward Christy. Before he could shout for her to watch her back, a rush of bodies knocked him sprawling, and a heavy weight dropped directly onto his back, driving him face first to the ground. Knees pressed into his buttocks, and a pair of large hands closed about his neck and squeezed. Ryan managed to roll over onto his back and look up at the hate-twisted, paint-distorted face bobbing over him. The warrior thrust a knife blade for Ryan's throat. Ryan wrenched himself aside, and the edge of the blade skimmed the side of his neck as he triggered the Sig Sauer. A crimson spray burst from the bridge of the warrior's nose. His grip loosened. Elbowing the dead weight from his body, Ryan rolled to one side. He sighted a feather-bedecked man, leveling a rifle at him. Ryan rested his pistol on his wrist. The campsite was bloody chaos. Jack snapped his right arm, throwing one of his leaf-bladed throwing knives. With a blade held in his left hand, he expertly slashed the throat of another attacker. Doc drew bead on a warrior who was running for Mildred. Four cylinders spewing plumes of white smoke sprang from the launch tubes atop the AMAC and bounced across the battleground. The cylinders rolled, and almost immediately the campsite was engulfed by blinding clouds of vapor. The smoke seared eyes, lungs, nostrils, and bare flesh, and the warring party staggered around the killing ground, groping for fresh air, not for each other. Ryan crouched, trying to get beneath the clouds of gas. Through the jiggling, burning water in his eye, Ryan caught glimpses of shapes moving through the billowing chemical vapors. The Indian seemed to be engaged in a slow, stubborn retreat back toward the shadows, hoping to melt into the night. They were obviously unwilling to give up the struggle, despite the heavy losses they had incurred, and the fact that they were all but incapacitated by the gas. Ryan moved as quickly as he dared in the direction of the cry, fearing it might be Christy. Trying to focus through the fiery blur of his vision, he saw two figures at the far edge of the campsite. It was a thin Sioux warrior kneeling on Fleur's back. One hand was tangled in the long mahogany fall of her hair. He was pulling her head up and back, exposing the white column of her throat to the knife he gripped in one fist. Ryan sprinted toward them, firing the Sig Sauer's remaining four rounds. The warrior sprang from the woman's body and into the shadows. Standing over Fleur, Ryan reached down to help her up by one arm. She raked the hair out of her dirt-streaked face and looked up at him in astonishment.
You helped me?
Actually, I saved you. Are you all right?
Before Fleur could answer, a bare arm darted from the darkness, hooked around Ryan's neck, and jerked him backward. Instead of resisting the force, Ryan kicked himself off the ground, throwing his full weight against the body behind him. He and the warrior rolled down a slight incline and onto soft grass at the bank of a creek. The Sioux had lost his knife, and his right arm locked in a death grip around Ryan's neck. The fingers of the warrior's free hand were pressing viciously against Ryan's larynx. Ryan drove a powerful blow into the Indian's midriff with his elbow and broke the hold. Ryan squirmed free and struggled to his feet. He clubbed down with the barrel of the Sig Sauer, striking the man between the shoulder blades. From a kneeling position, the Sioux lunged forward and wrapped his arms around Ryan's legs, causing him to fall forward, dropping the Sig Sauer and toppling over the warrior. Ryan managed to grasp the Indian by the hair and haul him into the stream with him. Both of them pitched into the water. The creek was shallow, barely waist deep, and the water was shockingly cold. It flushed the burning effects of the gas from Ryan's eye and nostrils. Ryan's closed left hand slammed into his adversary's jaw. Ryan grabbed the Sioux by the back of the neck. The Indian tried to rise from the water, but Ryan held him down, using all of his upper body strength.
Stay down there!
Finally, the man's struggles ceased. Ryan raised the warrior's head clear of the water and saw that the man's war paint had been washed from his face. He recognized the sharp, angular features of Touch the Sky, a.k.a. Joe. The lean-muscled Indian wasn't dead, though he was three-quarters drowned, his hair plastered flat to his head and shoulders, eagle feathers drooping and bedraggled. The Sioux was in no shape to continue fighting. Ryan slogged up the creek bank, hauling Joe with him. Joe bore two superficial bullet wounds, a blood-oozing hole in the upper thigh, and a red-edged furrow across the small of his back. Ryan retrieved his Sig Sauer. Joe was sitting up now, his jet-black eyes narrowed and seething with hatred.
Kill me, Washichun. I deserve it for failing to kill you when I saw you first.
Someone has already expressed the same opinion about you. I'm not going to cheer you unless you force me.
Aren't you with Hellstrom and his psychotics?
We're with them, but we're not of them. Get me?
Ryan!
Take off.
What will you tell the others?
That you got away from me. That's the truth, isn't it? Joe didn't respond. He rose to a crouch and soundlessly merged with the darkness.
Ryan climbed back up the slope.
Christy!
Christy ran to him, green eyes clouded by worry and gas-induced tears. She squeezed his arms and touched his face. Fleur marched close behind her.
You're wet. You're not hurt, not wounded?
No. The Indian got away when we hit the creek. He swam underwater, I think.
You think? That was Touch the Sky himself, you didn't make sure.
Normally I would have, except that I emptied my blaster, saving your life.
Fleur scowled, then wheeled away, taking long strides back to the campsite. Christy and Ryan followed her. The area looked like an open-air charnel house, given an added unearthly atmosphere by the plains of drifting chemical fog. The gas had dissipated to some extent, but the survivors of the battle all looked miserable. They stepped over the bodies of the slain. None of the companions bore injuries, beyond a few cuts and contusions, except for JB, whose fedora sported a fresh bullet hole. He was angry about it, since he held one of the incompetent sec-men responsible. Doc was suffering the worst from the effects of the gas, and Mildred tended to him. Ryan did an automatic body count. There were 14 dead Sioux warriors sprawled on the ground, leaking fluids from a variety of wounds and a variety of places. Out of the 10 sec men he spotted, only three were ambulatory, and one was cradling an obviously broken arm.
Looks like we got big time skunked.
If not for the six of us, this skirmish would have been a massacre.
Just then, Hellstrom stepped out of the wag with a grand, long-legged flourish. He held a handkerchief over his nose and mouth. Fleur quickly approached him.
We have six dead, four wounded. Zizo won't last through the night, so he doesn't count.
The opposition?
14, but only 9 are worth salvaging.
And the value of our people?
4, if you include Zizo.
A baker's dozen. Get to it. We'll attend to our own back home.
Hellstrom nodded in the direction of Ryan and his friends.
You and your group turn the tide, Cawdor. My thanks.
The white-suited man